Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, as promised, we have Sister Nancy, and also, as promised, we have none other than Gene, the Bitter Ender himself. He's coming in doing his service. You know, we've said earlier, we said before, our two historians, resident historians on Blood River Radio, Gene, there's nobody like Gene. He's taught history to make a living, because he loves it. And we also have Sister Nancy. They are historians, cum laude. Summa cum laude. You can't beat them. Par excellence. And we're going to do some history, a little bit of history tonight, a little Confederate history like we always do. But we're talking, they're going to talk mainly about what's going on now, about the unrelenting, never-ending attack, satanic attack on our white Southern Christian heritage, especially our white Southern Confederate history. And to get it started, Sister Nancy sent us called my attention to this video done by a nice Southern lady talking about, I think she talks about some about the what's going on in the Lexington Cemetery, about the evil SOBs trying to destroy their cemeteries up there. So if you will, Miss Liz, go ahead and roll that clip.
Hello. In 2021, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren ignited a plan to change military base names named after Confederates. She proposed an act of Congress establishing a naming commission to select new names for military bases named after our great Confederate leaders. The cost to change the military base names will be in excess of $60 million. In a surprise last-minute recommendation, the commission expanded its scope to include the disgraceful desecration of a gravesite and 108-year-old memorial situated amongst and adjacent to graves in Arlington National Cemetery. The beautiful Confederate monument at Arlington Cemetery was erected to signify a reconciliation between the North and South after the Civil War. Of course, we call it the War for Southern Independence in the South. This century-old monument was the idea of President McKinley, a former Union Army officer, and it has been honored throughout the years by other U.S. presidents until now. After the end of the Civil War, our country reunited. Yet today, almost 160 years later, there are politicians, hate groups, and members of the media who are trying to undo our reconciliation. These groups are trying to destroy anything to do with the Confederacy, of which tens of millions of Americans are descended. We should never allow people like Senator Warren and the Naming Commission to destroy our Confederate monuments and change the military base names. At the base of this beautiful Arlington monument is the burial plot of Jewish Confederate Moses Ezekiel, who sculpted the monument. Senator Warren's plan to change military base names and destroy monuments is hypocritical, since Senator Warren is from Massachusetts, where slavery became the cradle of slavery and slave trading for America. Massachusetts and other northeastern states, such as New York, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and Rhode Island, made a fortune off the slave trade industry. In 1641, Governor John Winthrop of Massachusetts legalized slavery in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. And there's a statue of him, Governor Winthrop, in Boston and in the Statuary Hall in our nation's capital. And most Ivy League schools were funded by slave traders. For example, Yale University was named for Elihu Yale, a prolific slave trader. Massachusetts boasts that they ended slavery. But the truth is that an enslaved woman had to sue for her freedom, and her successful litigation is what ended slavery. Not an outpouring of popular support or benevolent legislature. Former Confederate and Union soldiers united after the Civil War and fought side by side in the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, Korean War, and other battles. During those wars, former Confederates and Confederate descendants fought and achieved greatness. Democrat President Harry Truman was a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Sergeant York was the most highly decorated soldier in World War I. He received a Medal of Honor for killing 25 enemy soldiers and capturing 132. Likewise, World War II's Audie Murphy received the Medal of Honor for valor that he demonstrated at the age of 19 for single-handedly holding off a company of German soldiers in France. World War II's General George Patton Jr. was the most successful field commander in history. Last but not least were the great-grandsons of Confederate generals Nathan Bedford Forrest and Stonewall Jackson. In World War II, Colonel Jackson was shot down over France, and Brigadier General Nathan Bedford Forrest III was killed in action in Germany. Without their Confederate ancestors, we would not have these brave and courageous American veterans who served and died for this country. And there were and are many other Confederate descendants who have served and given their all for this country. My Confederate ancestors, along with thousands of others, defended their homes and communities when the South was invaded by the armies sent south by Lincoln to fight other Confederates and destroy the homes, businesses, churches, schools, livestock, and crops of Southern citizens. The troops of Union General William Tecumseh Sherman burned down mills in Roswell, Georgia. The 400 young women and children working at the mills were arrested by Sherman's troops, kidnapped, and put into rail cars and sent north to Kentucky and Ohio, where they were abandoned. Little is known about whatever happened to these 400 as they had to manage and try to find work as refugees. Some died along the way, and some had to give away their children as they couldn't care for them. Stories like this were common when Union troops mistreated Southern citizens, burned their homes, and stole anything of value. Items not pillaged were destroyed. An account of what happened to the lost mill workers that I was just talking about is in a book, The Women Will Howl, by Mary Deborah Pettit. And here's a copy of this book. Other horrors committed against Southerners is documented in Walter Sisko's book, War Crimes Against Southern Civilians. And here's a copy of that book by Sisko. And treatment of freed slaves was even worse. You might want to read Sick from Freedom to learn more about that. Our country has a long and complicated and honorable history with divisions, differences, and battles along the way. Our Confederate ancestors built this country and started businesses, formed towns, churches, schools, and fought in its wars. General Joseph Wheeler fought for the South and then again in the Spanish-American War and is buried at Arlington. Our country and its history is like a puzzle. If you remove a piece of the puzzle, you will no longer understand where our country has been and how it got to where it is today. There will be a hole where the piece of the puzzle belonged, and you will never know our nation's complete history. It is disrespectful and dishonorable to insult these men and women after they fought and represented this country so well. It would be shameful to remove or destroy the beautiful Reconciliation Monument to our Confederate ancestors in Arlington. And if they do, it won't be long before they dig up the 400 graves surrounding it. Those of us who have Confederate ancestors will not allow our ancestors to be disgraced in such a manner. Their existence and memory lives with those of us who are living and breathing today. Keep the Confederate Monument Arlington and the military base names. Please join the effort and call and meet with your representatives in Congress today. I thank you for watching and listening.
That was a very powerful audio, and I truly appreciate you sending us that, Miss Nancy, and sending it to JJ. Did a wonderful job playing that, and so did Miss Lizzie. They were gracious enough to skip that last commercial break. So we're going back to you, Miss Nancy. You and Jean, go ahead and take us on out.
Well, I thought she did a great job. It almost brought me to tears, even though I know the story pretty well.
Well, I think she did an outstanding job presenting the facts. Mm-hmm. I have a little bit of a different opinion of the whole situation. Why do we even want to try to reconciliate with these people? We would be much better off to leave this rotten administration in Washington. Those people in the North and in Washington hate us, and they want to destroy everything we have. And we have nothing in common with people from New York or Michigan or California. And they move in here to the South because of low taxes and good weather and job opportunities. And then the first thing they want to do is turn Alabama and Kentucky, Tennessee, you know, Virginia, Georgia, Mississippi, all of our states into just like the hell holes they ran away from. Wow. So I understand they wanted to reconciliate the country in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and that was very commendable. But I think in today's world, it's a fool's errand to try to ever reconciliate with these people. They hate us. They hate our history. They hate everything about us. And all we're used for is cannon fodder to fight their wars for them and pay their taxes to prop up their rotten government. So I don't see any chance of reconciliating with these people. And
I totally agree with that.
I think the sooner we get off the sinking ship, the better off we'll be. And that's just my opinion. And I appreciate the information that the young lady gave us. And she's right on so much of that and bringing out the atrocities that were committed against the Southern civilian population. The same thing that they put Germans on trial for and executed at the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal. Mm-hmm. The Yankee soldiers did that all over the South, and there weren't any war crimes for them because the losing side has all the war criminals. The winning side never has any war criminals, and that's
sure.
just
oh,
down
that's
through
right.
history. That's the way that
right.
goes. So anyway, that's my opinion, for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think we've ever been forgiven from the time of the end of the war till today for being Southerners. But I was going to read you something that ties in with what she said, and we talked about this last week. And it does have a connection to the naming committee, because when the Roswell women were brought up from Roswell, which is north of Atlanta, they were brought up to Louisville, my city. They were put in prisons or hospital. They could call it a hospital, a refugee hospital. They were farmed out to mills in the north. Some of them were taken up to Indianapolis. Most of these people never got back to Atlanta. But I wanted to read what this no good Sherman, he is totally responsible for this. It was actually totally illegal. It was actually against even the laws of that the Union was following. They were ultimately objected to what he did. But here's part of his orders. And these are the orders he gave regarding the mill workers who were at Roswell. He said, "I repeat my orders that you arrest all people, male and female, connected with those factories, no matter what the clamor, and let them foot it under guard to Marietta, whence I will send them by cars," which is actually trains, "to the north. destroy and make some disposition of all mills, save small flouring mills, mainly, manifestly, for local use, but all sawmills and factories dispose of effectually, and useful laborers excused by reason of the skill as manufacturers from conscription, are as much prisoners as if armed. The poor women will make a howl. Let them take along their children and clothing, provided they have the means of hauling, or you can spare them. We will retain them until they can reach a country where they can live in peace and security. In your next letter, give me as much information as you can as to the size and dimensions of the burn bridge at Roswell across the Chattahoochee. We have plenty of pontoon bridges, but I would much prefer Ford's, blah, blah, blah. I am respectfully yours, William Tecumseh Sherman. Well, these were approximately 400 men, women, and children that were sent to Louisville. And I want to tell you what they did with them here in Louisville. This is a total hypocrisy. The Union occupied Louisville almost immediately, really before the war began. And this is how these poor people were treated. Totally hypocritical by these Yankee villains. It says, this is written up in the local paper, and it says raids on women, and of course they're saying it's not, you know, it's not a good thing that they brought all these women up to Kentucky trying to force them north of the Ohio. And it says, we further learn by the same paper that when these women and children arrived at Louisville, they were detained there, advertised to be hired out as servants to take the place of a large number of Negroes who have been liberated by the military authorities and are now gathered in large camps throughout Kentucky, where they are fed and supported in idleness and viciousness at the expense of the loyal taxpayers. Thus, while these Negro women are rioting and luxuriating in the federal camps on the bounty of the government, the white women and children of the South are arrested at their homes and sent off as prisoners in a distant country to be sold into bondage, as the following advertisement fully attests. This is an ad in the newspaper. Notice, families residing in the city or country wishing seamstress or servants can be suited by applying at the refugee quarters on Broadway between 9th and 10th. This is sanctioned by Captain Jones, Provost Marshal, blah, blah, blah. Hypocritical Yankee enforced servitude.
And they had the blacks lounging around in camps and being supported by the government. Gosh, that hadn't changed in 165 years, has it?
No, not really.
No, yeah. Well, that's once again a reason to get away from a government like that. They still do that to us today. I mean, they don't, you know, the laws that they have enforced against us, white Christian conservative people. They send their FBI thugs out to attack anybody that's in the opposition party. I mean, the only thing they're not doing is sending the regular military down here to just shoot us down in the street and kill us every chance they get.
But they're hoping that the vaccine
not
will
yet.
Kill us, I guess. That's what they're hoping.
Eddie, not yet,
don't,
but
don't
that
give
day
any
may
ideas.
Be coming.
back to the end of this story, which I failed to tell you, and I've told you last week. These poor women were treated by Dr. Mary Walker, and she mistreated them. Some of the women complained to the commandant, and he wrote a nasty letter somewhat. He was talking about Dr. Mary Walker, accused of abusing these women, and that she is one they're going to name the military forts for.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen their list. Other than Eisenhower, I can't recognize hardly any of them that had military experience, except they meet the standard for being female, Hispanic, black, you know, all the check, they got all the boxes checked for those. Not that they really did anything else that was to commemorate.
What about Gay? I mean, I sure hope they send some military forts named after gays.
Yeah. Well, that'll shake the Russians up. They'll probably turn around and run out of Ukraine when they see that list right there.
You know, Nancy, one thing that struck me that lady from the audio that she sent us, that she mentioned, we talked about that on this show. She said probably after they get through destroying the monuments to our Confederate dead in Arlington, you know what she said? She said there's 400 Confederate graves up there, I think she said. She said, well, they'll probably start digging those graves up. And Gene and I both live here in Tennessee, and we've seen that here in Memphis, haven't we, Gene?
Oh, yes. Yeah. They went after the grave of General and Mrs. Forrest right there in Forest Park in Memphis and illegally tore the statue down and sold that property or to a fake nonprofit organization and let them come in there and tear the statue down. And then it was a lawsuit by the Sons of Confederate Veterans and the Forrest family that got the bodies removed from there. They would have been desecrated if they'd left them there. They would, the animals in Memphis would have destroyed the caskets, and who knows what they would have done with the bodies. So, and who knows what they're going to do with the bodies at Arlington when they remove them out of there. They may say they're going to move them to another area, but, you know, how can you trust the federal government? They lie to us on a daily basis, and who knows what they're going to do up there at Arlington. So it's just one more slap in the face that we have for, you know, trusting the central government. Oh, gosh, it's getting worse by the day.
You know, that's a satanic hatred. You know, that's the only word I know to use. That's a hatred, an unnatural hatred. That's a devilish, a satanic hatred that you would want to come in and do what they did. They're digging up, they dug up the grave here in Memphis, Tennessee, of General Nathan Bedford Forrest and his family, and to want to go, and I guarantee you that lady is right. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. They will, if these Satan-worshipping bastards, if they get their way, they will dig up every single one of those Confederate graves. And they, you know what? And they won't just haul them off anywhere, Miss Nancy, like you said. They'll desecrate them. They will inflict as much desecration on them as possible. They'll probably put them in a stockyard somewhere.
Yeah.
go ahead, Miss Nancy.
Well, they'll probably put them in a mass grave. Probably
yeah,
do.
That's what they've done before.
Like they did at Shiloh with hundreds of our men in the unmarked mass graves.
Yeah,
oh, that's sick.
Dump them in there and cover them up with, you know, have the garbage trucks from that local area just dump the garbage on top of them, do something
oh,
like that.
God.
Yeah, well, the whole Arlington Cemetery, you know, as a veteran, I could be buried there for free, but I would never want to be buried at Arlington. To me, it's an insult. To General Robert E. Lee.
Absolutely.
And that's why the Yankees put the Yankee graves there. And they said that General Meigs said, put the graves as close to the house as possible so no one would ever want to live here again.
Mm-hmm.
And Arlington is an in-your-face to Robert E. Lee and his family. And that's the only reason.
There would be a minuscule of people who even knew that Arlington was ever owned by the Robert E. Lee.
Yeah, it was the Lee property, and that's why they put the cemetery there. So nobody would live there. Now, of course, I look at, you know, my weird perspective on life. I would love living there, and get up every morning and walk around the grounds and say, yeah, I got those at Sharpsburg right there. That's where they came from. Oh, there's a bunch over there that we got at Second Manassas. Oh, and this is Chancellorsville down here. Oh. And, you know, I would enjoy that every morning, just taking a stroll around and looking at all the dead Yankees I was responsible for. I think that would be tremendous.
Well, you know, there's two issues here about Lee. Lee himself personally didn't own slaves. That's another red herring. They came from his wife's family, and I say that the Yankees stole a lot of the Washington memorabilia that was left there at Arlington when they looted it.
Sister Nancy, we have to go to a break. Hear that music. Dear Blood River Radio family, please hold on, and we'll be right back to you in just a couple of seconds, a couple of minutes, rather.
Daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. The White House has no comment on White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain expecting to step down in the coming weeks. The New York Times reports this would be the biggest staffing shakeup in the Biden administration since he took over the White House 2 years ago. A search for his replacement is already reportedly underway. A former president is weighing in on the debt ceiling.
Former President Trump warning Republicans not to cut entitlement programs as part of their negotiations to raise the debt ceiling. In a video message, Trump said under no circumstances should Republicans vote to cut a single penny from Medicare or Social Security. Instead, he said cuts should be made in foreign aid, immigration programs, and what he's calling climate extremism. House Republicans have said they will not raise the debt ceiling unless deep cuts are made to federal spending. I'm John Schaefer.
A Florida woman is facing first-degree murder charges after shooting and killing her terminally ill husband. Jerry Gillen was planning to commit suicide inside his Daytona Beach hospital room but couldn't do it. His wife Ellen did. Sleepless nights and exercise have a connection. Corey Myers explains.
Should you work out when you're tired? The simple answer, yes. 1 in 3 Americans are sleep deprived. But according to Dr. Phyllis Zee, director of the Center for Circadian and Sleep Medicine at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago, it's a perfect cycle. First, there is clear data to show that regular exercise improves sleep quality. Research also shows that if you sleep better, you're more likely to exercise. So, even if you had a bad night's sleep, you should maintain your physical activity.
The Mega Millions jackpot starting to grow again. Lottery officials say no one picked all six numbers in last night's drawing. Tuesday's jackpot worth $31 million. As for tonight's Powerball jackpot, that's worth $473 million. This is USA News.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for healthcare, and here's why. Not only is it open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also a time you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. And it's true, the typical family switching to MediShare saves $500 or more a month, which is obviously huge for a lot of people, but what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to health insurance. Double. There are 400,000 members, they've shared over $4 billion in medical bills, and it really is a great community too. People encourage and pray for each other. And here's the thing, if you join MediShare Complete right now, they'll waive your new member fees and you'll save an additional 10% off all of 2023. That's right, no fee to join, 10% off every month of next year, but it's a very limited time offer. You have to sign up before January 15th. Great savings, great health care. Find out more. Call now. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Go ahead. Make my day.
The only war crime is to lose the war. Herman Gorey. I would just like to ask Sister Nancy a question and or Jean. Well, actually, both of them. They can both respond. I wonder how many people, these historians, these PhDs in history, I wonder how many of them have even ever heard of the Roswell women and what, I mean, and the atrocious, unbelievable criminal treatment that the Yankee Army inflicted upon the Roswell women and children, and old men. I mean, that I guarantee, double damn to you, Gene and Nancy, that will not be taught in the history books because, you know, we all know that the North was nothing but the Yankee Army, the government on the Potomac, Sodom on the Potomac, nothing but saints. They would never do anything. They would never make slaves out of white people like that. They were just they were fighting to destroy slaves.
No. And they wouldn't come down here. And if you read Lincoln's Emancipation, which freed no slaves, it only applied to those states in rebellion against the Union, and it even exempted areas that were occupied by the federal troops that invaded the South in up to January of 1863 when it went into effect, and it even listed the parishes in Louisiana were exempt. And I read that one the first time, and I thought, well, that didn't make any sense. The land they controlled would be the easiest to enforce that, but that wasn't the point. If the slaves weren't free, in the land controlled by the Yankee Army. They declared them contraband of war, just like possessions of Southerners, like going in and stealing everything of value out of a Southerner's home. And the same thing applied to the blacks that were slaves. They were contraband of war. So now the Yankee soldiers could come in and take the slaves, the blacks, at gunpoint and force them to do the dirty work that the white Yankee soldiers didn't want to do. Dig the latrines, clean up after the horses and mules, bury the dead bodies. And that's why they didn't want them to be free. They wanted them to be contraband of war or possessions of the enemy. So that way they could take them and have labor forces and not make the white Yankee soldiers do all the nasty jobs that were involved with the army.
Well, you know, I had a – go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just had a different take – I mean, another take on that. My thinking – and I just found out, well, probably 15 years ago when I read Sandburg's history of Lincoln – and the only thing I really read was the Emancipation Proclamation. I was awakened then. My gosh, this doesn't free any of the slaves, really, except in an area where they have no right to free them. And I think the reason, another reason why they didn't free them is because they did, the Union and the Yankees had plenty of slaves up north, and that was not the reason they were fighting, and they didn't want to let their own soldiers know that they were fighting They were theoretically fighting for the republic, I guess is what they're or for the government, and of course they couldn't free those ones that were held that they held in effect because they didn't want I guess anybody to really know they were holding so many slaves in the north.
Well, they didn't want to do that. That's correct, but they didn't want a mass exodus of blacks out of the south coming north as cheap labor.
That's true.
And that would drive down the wages of laborers in the north, and they especially didn't want the blacks coming north. The labor force didn't, and especially the Irish, because they were already in the north. They were at the bottom of the totem pole as it was. I mean, it was New York that put up signs, and this wasn't Charleston or Richmond or Mobile, but in New York they had signs that said, "Dogs and Irish, keep off the grass." So that was their opinion of the Irish that were used for all the dirty, you know, jobs that the white native Yankee people didn't want to do. They used the Irish as their slaves up there, and they didn't want any competition coming in from blacks being freed slaves and moving up north. And that's why the Underground Railroad had to go through the north and all the way to Canada. And blacks that ran away from.
I've always been highly suspicious that that even existed, but that's what they say.
It's a big story,
even,
you know. And got all these.
I'm not even sure I believe that line, but that's what.
Songs
say.
About it and everything, but it didn't go just across the Potomac River or across the Ohio River. It had to go all the way to Canada because they.
They wouldn't accept them in the north. No, they had
no,
to.
No, that fugitive slave law. They wanted to get rid of them and send them back south or send them somewhere, get them out of the north. So. Yeah. Getting out of the southern states and into a northern state, that was no guarantee you were going to be freed. You had to get all the way to Canada up there. So.
Well, you know, back to the who knows about the Roswell women. I'll tell you something, Eddie. When I first started studying more in detail about the war, I would attend the Louisville Civil War Roundtable, and I met a lady who was very interested and very aware of the history, and she took a tour of Atlanta. And you know what she told me? That the tour guide lied to her that there was no such thing as the Roswell women.
Huh. Well, and that's why you don't hear anything about it, because, once again, the winners write the history book. They control the media. They control the Internet. They control movies, everything. And anything that's bad about the Yankee invasion of the South and the subjugation of the South is going to be glossed over, ignored. You know, that's why that movie, just bring this point up, one of my favorite movies is Gods and Generals, that was about Lee and Jackson. And Stephen Lang played Thomas Jackson, did a super job. And
Robbie Lee was great.
Yeah.
Robert? He's one of my favorite actors who played.
Yeah, my mind went blank there for a second.
Robert something.
Anyway, It really gave a accurate portrayal of why the South was fighting
Duvall.
For, and that Robert Duvall, great, probably the best role he ever had, and that's why the critics panned the movie, because it gave an honest representation of the South and what they were doing, and they've never played it on TV, never shown that on TV, and they trashed it so bad it was a financial disaster in the movie theaters. But because it told the truth. So the Yankee Empire cannot allow the truth to get out. And the things like Roswell, like stealing the land from Lee to make a cemetery out of it, and just a vindictive in-your-face move by the Yankees to put graves right up as close to the house as they could possibly get them and brag about so no one would ever live there again.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. And I've had people throw it in my face and say, well, if you hate the United States like that, why don't you leave? And I said, well, why didn't you pay attention in history class? We tried for 4 years to leave, and we killed 390,000 of you obnoxious SOBs and maimed and crippled another 100,000 and put a gun to the head of that lying, murdering dictator of yours and blew his brains out all over his crazy old lady. I said, you people aren't very smart. Can't you take a hint? We wanted to leave. And the reason we are reunited now is, always remember, 13 states voted to leave the Union. And, you know, what is more important than the right of the people to vote and determine their own destiny? So we voted to leave the Union and form our own country. We are a part of the United States because we were forced at the point of a gun to
Absolutely.
Be a part of the United States. And that's something they don't ever want to admit.
Not to interrupt you, but we're supposed to be celebrating Stonewall Jackson's birthday today, and we've gotten off on so many different subjects, but that was going to be your topic.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, January, some great Confederates claim the month of January as their birthday, you know, like Robert E. Lee on the 19th, and today, the 21st, is the birthday of Thomas Stonewall Jackson.
One
other person I'd like to throw in, and probably not as well known as Lee or Jackson, but certainly an outstanding individual in his field, was Matthew Fontaine Murray. And he was born in Fredericksburg, Virginia on January the 14th, 1806. Now, his family moved to Tennessee when he was, I think, 5 years old. And at 19, he joined the United States Navy as a midshipman. And Murray was a prolific writer and very intelligent, and many naval subjects, and he was one of the people that was instrumental in helping to establish the Naval Academy at Annapolis, Maryland.
Oh.
Now, he was probably best known for his books charting ocean currents, which he claimed and later proved were just as predictable and just as constant as roads on dry land. And for his navigation work, he earned the nickname or title Pathfinder of the Seas.
Mm-hmm.
And he was lauded in the New York press in Washington and Philadelphia and everywhere as an example of a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant United States type of individual. And the United States was a leader in the world in navigation. And this was just a tremendous individual, just an example of how great the United States was until the war came along and he went with the South. And then all of his people that had been lauding and praising him turned around and said, oh, this thing's a hoax. There are no currents in the ocean. No, it's a Southerner. And since he's a Southerner, he couldn't be smart enough to figure this out. But the captains of the Confederate commerce raiders didn't think it was a hoax. And they used Murray's charts to cruise the sea lanes and pick off hundreds of Yankee merchant ships during the war.
Folks, we'll come back to this subject right after this break.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
This is Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more while listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
A BNS is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, dear Blood River Radio audience, family, I cannot believe this is the very end of this show. The 3 hours seems to go some ways faster than two. Anyway, we're back here with sister, our big sister, Nancy Hitt, and my brother, Gene, the bitter ender. And I know you're probably not just tuning in, but I'd like to say this, what we talk about during the break. This history lessons that Gene and Nancy are teaching, you can't get anywhere else. It's just like our people said, he who wins the war teaches the history, who controls the present controls the past, and he who controls the past controls the future. But if you want to know what's really going on, this is valuable. You can't buy this material. You know, nowadays when white people are being just tromped down and told that they should hate themselves, in every race in the world, every other person in the world, they hate us, they despise us, they want us dead. You need to teach your kids to be proud of themselves. I'm just saying, we have two of the best historians. I don't know anybody else that can teach this stuff. So I hope you're paying attention. And I hope you're not just letting it go after the program. I hope you will spread this news. And go back and listen to the archives. If you'd like to know which of these archives that you could listen to the history lessons of Gene and Nancy, contact me, Eddie at bloodriverradio.com, and I will get that information to you. But right now, we're going to go right back. I think Gene was the one talking about before we left.
But, I'll just finish up the information on Matthew Fontaine Murray. We were talking about him and his naval career and then in the United States Navy, and he earned the nickname the Pathfinder of the Seas for his charts on ocean currents and winds. And the thing we need to point out, if you were traveling, say, from New York to London, you wouldn't go in a straight line. You'd follow the Gulf Stream, and it would take you way off of a straight line between those two points. But by using the Gulf Stream and the winds that followed that, it would get you there 3 or 4 days earlier than trying to take a straight line right across the ocean. So that was the whole point in all of his research. And he was lauded for it and praised for it before the war, but then he went with the South. The Yankee press said, no, he's a Southerner. He couldn't have come up with something like that. But like we said, the captains of the Confederate commerce raiders used his charts, and they pretty much put a stop to the U.S. merchant marine during the war. By 1864, no foreign country would ship a cargo on a U.S. ship. It was too dangerous because the French and the British and the Spanish, they all knew that the Alabama and the Shenandoah and the Nashville and Sumter and the Florida, they were all out there hunting for anything with the U.S. flag on it. And that was because of Murray's information that he had. Now, he also served in England during the war and helped James Bullitt, along with other Confederate agents, purchase these state-of-the-art steam and sail-powered ships that were turned into raiders like the Alabama and the Shenandoah. And then Matthew Fontaine Murray had, past tense, a statue on Monument Avenue in Richmond until the communist purge of everything Confederate destroyed Monument Avenue. And I don't know what they've done with his statue, but it's no longer there. So that's what happened to our history in Richmond.
You know, with reference to the Pathfinder, I did go to Liverpool, and I did meet up with some people that knew a lot about James Dunwoody Bullock, and
yeah.
I actually read Service Afloat, about the CSS Alabama, and there
yes.
is that is one of the greatest books of greatest adventure books I think I've ever read.
Isn't it?
And
by
most
Raphael
people
Sims.
Do not.
It was Captain of the Alabama. Yeah.
Most people, when they study about the war, unfortunately, they don't do much study about the raiders, about the Alabama. The Alabama was the greatest, I mean the greatest ship that ever was on the ocean.
Took 69 enemy ships, merchant ships, during the war, and sank one enemy warship outside of Galveston. They suckered the Yankee warship out away from the blockade squadron, got them out in the Gulf, and then turned around on them and just blasted them right out of the water.
That's,
so they say, well, it wasn't a warship. It wasn't a war. Well, it was then. It certainly
yeah.
did. And, that book, if you ever get a chance to read it to our audience, Memoirs of Service Afloat. And Raphael Sims from Mobile was a brilliant, brilliant historian and jurist. And he explains in that book why secession was legal and why the invasion of the South was illegal. And the thing I found so interesting in reading about that, you learned about all these ports that they hit in the Caribbean, the South Atlantic, all over. It's like a travel book. And how they sailed a ship and how you set your sails and adjusted the angle of the sails to catch the wind to actually pull the ship in like a 45-degree angle. That was amazing to me.
Well,
and
getting coal was amazing to me, how they would find coal in these different locations.
Yeah, because the Yankees were telling everybody not to sell anything to the Confederates. And, of course, the Yankees had the money, and they had the warships, so it was really a difficult struggle to find supplies. And most of them, they would take off these Yankee ships that they captured. And they couldn't take them back to the southern ports because the southern ports were blockaded. And they couldn't sell them to a foreign nation because the Yankee Empire told the French or the British or Spanish, whoever, not to buy these ships. So the only choice they had left was to burn their ship. And
right.
they would take the civilians off and the supplies and fresh water and whatever they needed. And then, unfortunately, sailors hate to see another ship burn, no matter who it belonged to. They'd have to set these ships on fire and burn them. And then after they had taken four or five, they had so many civilians on decks that the sixth ship that they captured, or seventh, they would have to take all the civilians off and put them on this ship, and they would make their captain sign a ransom bond that
mm-hmm.
he promised
mm-hmm.
that he would honor that bond and pay the value of his ship to the Confederate States government. And it was, as they were sailing off, the officers and crew on the Alabama just laughed and said, well, we'll never see that money, that's for sure. And as soon as they get in a Yankee port, they'll forget about that. And, Captain Sims laughed, too, and he said, yeah, but we had to get rid of all these civilians that are covering up the decks here. So,
well, one of the most interesting things to me was they only had one sailor to ever die, and he died in a shooting accident in South Africa.
Yep, he was an officer.
And his body was exhumed not too long ago and taken to some of the Confederate veterans, and he's buried there
to the family cemetery there at Elm Springs. And
now,
I was
other
there
people
for that
died.
Service.
I mean, I'm sorry, I'm wrong about that. Only one died before Sherburne, before the battle,
yep.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so the final days of the Alabama, they pulled into the French port at Cherbourg in France to get repairs on the ship. They'd been out on the ocean for 2 years, and the copper plating on the hull was pulling off, and the engine was in bad shape, and the ship was just pretty much a wreck because they couldn't go to any ports anywhere to get it fixed. And so a Yankee warship came down from England, the Kearsage, and was waiting outside the harbor. And on that Sunday morning, Captain Sims took the Alabama out. And the French knew that there was going to be a battle between these two American ships. They ran special trains from Paris down to Cherbourg. And they were talking about when they left the harbor, they looked back and the whole coastline and the bluffs there at Cherbourg were just solid black with people in suits and everything that came down to see this battle between the two American ships. And they got outside the three-mile limit, and they started circling each other. And one of the first shots of the Alabama, a shell lodged right into the rudder of the Kearsarge. But the fuse had been out there, and it had gotten damp and corroded, and the fuse didn't explode. And if that shell had exploded, it would have blown the whole rear end off the Kearsarge, and it would have gone down tail first down into the water, and the battle would have been over. But it didn't explode, and the Kearsarge was a regular warship, had heavier armament on it and guns on it than the Alabama did. And finally, it just shot the Alabama to pieces, and they kept firing even as the Alabama was sinking, and the crew members of the Alabama were trying to get into lifeboats and get off of there. And one of the most poignant parts of that, the doctor on the Alabama was getting the wounded sailors into one of the last lifeboats there. And they told him, well, the doctor has the right to go with the wounded. You need to get in the lifeboat. And he said, no, if I get in, it's going to capsize. It's got too many people in it right now, and one more person's going to capsize it. He said, go ahead and send it away with the wounded. What they didn't know was he couldn't swim. So when he sent that boat away, he was pretty much signing his own death certificate right there. And then, of course, he did. He drowned and didn't make it out of there. So
there's a marker, I think, for Dr. Llewellyn, I believe.
That's it, Dr. Llewellyn.
Dr. Llewellyn at a hospital in London.
Yep, that's who it was. And Liverpool was where a lot of these ships were made. And another fact about Liverpool, they made what later became the CSS Shenandoah there. And, of course, they would take it outside of British waters and then arm it as a warship. And it sailed from Liverpool down the Atlantic around Cape Town, across the Indian Ocean. They picked up a detachment of Confederate Marines in Melbourne, Australia, or Australians, and made them Confederate Marines. They sailed up into the Arctic Ocean in the Bering Sea, and they destroyed the United States whaling fleet because they used whale oil and lamps back then. And they completely destroyed the U.S. whaling fleet, and they turned around, and they were headed for San Francisco. They were going to raid San Francisco. And they stopped a British ship out on the high seas to check their papers and make sure it was a British ship and not a Yankee ship flying a British flag. And it was a British ship. And the British told them, said, well, we're sorry, mates, but your war has been over for 3 months. And, of course, they'd been up in the Bering Sea. They had no way of knowing what was going on back in the States. So they dumped all their cannons overboard so they wouldn't be considered a pirate ship, sailed down the west coast of the United States, the west coast of South America, rounded the Cape Horn, came back up, recrossed the equator, and brought the Shenandoah back into Liverpool, England, and dropped anchor on the Mersey River. And they surrendered the last official Confederate flag to the British government on November the 6th, 1865. And that was when the last Confederate flag was surrendered to the British. So,
you know what they say in Liverpool?
That is incredibly interesting.
They say that the war started and ended in Liverpool. Because at Sumter, they were firing cannons that were made in Liverpool.
Huh. Now, I didn't
know
that.
And the son, no, the brother of James Dunwoody Bullock was on the Shenandoah, and they surrendered 6 months after the war. So they're saying in Liverpool, Liverpool had connections to the beginning and the end of the war.
Well, yeah, they brought the ship back there, surrendered their flag to the British authorities, and paid off the crew members and released them. And then they were at Liverpool. I think they went to a Beatles concert that night, but I'm not real sure. You might want to check that. Do a fact check on that one.
It was Beatles.
Beatles.
Ringo's great-great-grandpappy.
Yeah.
Well, y'all, that is the most – I think this is probably the most interesting hour for me we've ever had. I've really been enjoying it. I'm sure – Blood River Radio family has. Well, Blood River Radio family, that brings another hour to the end, another 3 hours to the end, as a matter of fact. God bless you. Thank you so much, Gene and Nancy and Monica and Ram, for coming on. And thank you, Jay and little Lizzie, for making this show runs flawlessly. And thank you, Blood River Radio family. God bless you. Hey, tune in same time, same place, next week on the 28th. We're supposed to have Mark Tommy in. I don't know who else is going to be with him. We'll figure that out later. Well, good night, everybody.